The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's good to be back behind the Edstone microphone. I want to thank those who were filling in over the last few programs, Brent Nachtigall down in Jerusalem, and then here at Edstone, Richard Palmer and Brad McDonald, who filled in yesterday. Well, coming up on today's program, I'll be talking about Hillary Clinton and the rule of law. We'll be making a few points about the Benghazi report that came out last week, and then also examine what the FBI Director James Comey said yesterday when he announced that he will not recommend that the Department of Justice bring charges against Hillary Clinton for the email scandal, that investigation that's been going on now for more than a year. Later on in the show, also, we'll be talking about some of the latest statistics from the TV program here in the UK and also from the radio program. And we'll give you some updates, too, on the literature distribution figures from here in the UK. And if we have time, I'd like to run through a few emails that have come in recent days, or at least over the last week or so. So yesterday, just 2 hours before Hillary Clinton boarded Air Force One and set off for her first joint campaign appearance with President Obama, the FBI Director, James Comey, he said the FBI would recommend that no charges be brought against Mrs. Clinton for the way she mishandled classified information while serving as Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013 when she stepped down. This is from the New York Times just today about the FBI investigation and the emails, the email servers that Mrs. Clinton had, her personal private servers that she did business on, basically. The Times says here, but on a day of political high drama in Washington, Mr. Comey rebuked Mrs. Clinton as being extremely careless in using private email, a private email address and server. He raised questions about her judgment, contradicted statements she had made about her email practices, said it was possible that hostile foreign governments had gained access to her account, and declared that a person still employed by the government, Mrs. Clinton left the State Department in 2013, but that a person still employed by the government could have faced disciplinary action for doing what she did. That's how the Times covered it. And yet, as Mr. Comey brought out at the end of his 15-minute statement, after essentially laying out all of the evidence for bringing on criminal charges, for bringing on the indictment, he basically let her off the hook and said, we're not going to recommend that the Justice Department proceed forth with an indictment of any kind. This is what Mr. Comey said regarding, again, this investigation. We'll just run through a few of the highlights from what he said yesterday. This is clip one.
Our investigation looked at whether there is evidence that classified information was improperly stored or transmitted on that personal system in violation of a federal statute that makes it a felony to mishandle classified information either intentionally or in a grossly negligent way.
So that's what he said, basically, in what they were investigating and whether or not she violated this statute, which makes it a felony if you mishandle classified information. And he says they're either with intent or intentionally or in a grossly negligent way. I mean, that's how it's worded exactly in the statute. Here's what Mr. Comey went on to say. This is clip two.
from the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received. 8 of those chains contained information that was top secret at the time they were sent. 36 of those chains contained secret information at the time, and 8 contained confidential information at the time.
So he continually stresses here, at the time, because it essentially exposes the lie that Mrs. Clinton had been repeatedly saying over the past year, that, look, there was, I mean, we didn't email anything that was classified, and really the only things that are classified now, they've been retroactively made classified. But at the time, I mean, everything was above board. None of this was classified material. Here's one example of a couple of statements that Mrs. Clinton made last year regarding this point on whether or not she emailed classified information.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified materials.
I never sent or received any classified material. They are retroactively classifying it.
Pretty strong statement. And as I say, it's one that she made repeatedly, that she didn't send any classified material. Now, following on that, in this 15-minute statement from Mr. Comey, he also got into just how many emails were turned over to the FBI. I guess it was about 30,000 in total. But he said yesterday that there were thousands and thousands of others that were not turned over to the FBI. Here's clip number 4.
The FBI also discovered several thousand work-related emails that were not among the group of 30,000 emails returned by Secretary Clinton to state in 2014.
Now, he went on to explain how they turned up these additional emails, and he also explained in his statement that there were many others that were permanently scrubbed or deleted that they couldn't get to, but they did get to thousands more. And again, this directly contradicted what Mrs. Clinton said last year. Here's another one, clip 5.
I have absolute confidence that everything that could be in any way connected to work is now in the possession of the State Department.
Anything connected in any way to work or work-related emails, it's all been turned over to the FBI. It's all been given to the investigators. And Mr. Comey said yesterday, look, we've discovered several thousands more. Several thousand more. You can see why there's so many Americans that don't trust the presumptive Democrat candidate or nominee for president. This is someone who's running for president that could conceivably be voted in as president in just 4 months. Joel Hilliker's talked recently, this was in the July trumpet, about the two remaining choices. He said that basically the one that wins in November is probably going to be the one that voters hate the less, or hate less than the other. Joe Hilliker says, every 4 years, Americans get swept up in political promises of hope and change, reform, shaking things up, taking the country back, making America great again. And then we're disillusioned for another 4 years. Now, this time around, many people seem disillusioned even before the general election campaign has begun. Even before it begins, there's so many people today that are disillusioned, and you can see why with the stories that keep coming out about both candidates. But over the last week, I mean, there's been quite a lot about Mrs. Clinton's problems in communicating the truth. James Comey yesterday, he explained how that he received, or how that they received the 30,000 emails. And then the process that the Clinton lawyer team went through to hand all of these emails over to the FBI. This is clip number 6.
The lawyers doing the sorting for Secretary Clinton in 2014 did not individually read the content of all of her emails as we did for those available to us. Instead, they relied on header information, and they used search terms to try to find all work-related emails among the reportedly more than 60,000 that were remaining on her system at the end of 2014. It's highly likely that their search missed some work-related emails and that we later found them, for example, in the mailboxes of other officials or in the Slack space of a server.
That's from, again, James Comey's press conference yesterday. He talked about how that the lawyers for Mrs. Clinton, they were the ones doing the sorting. They were the ones that searched through the 60,000 emails and then turned over about 30,000. He explains how that, well, later on, he says, I don't guess we have this in the clip, but he says later on, it's also likely that there are other work-related emails that were not, that they did not produce to state and that we did not find elsewhere and that are now gone because they deleted all emails they did not return to state. And the lawyers cleaned their devices in such a way as to preclude complete forensic recovery. The lawyers for Mrs. Clinton, that is, they turned some of them over and then deleted the others and then cleaned their devices in a way to preclude complete forensic recovery. It was the team of lawyers that basically decided which ones were important enough to hand over to the government. Now, in the course of, again, this press conference, so I guess it wasn't really a press conference. It was more like an official statement, an announcement. But he also exposed the lie about really just having these private servers so that she could simplify things and work from one device, one phone, in order to keep it simple. Here's how Mrs. Clinton explained it last year. This is clip 7.
Thought it would be easier to carry just one device for my work and for my personal emails instead of two.
So she just had one device for work and personal emails, and she didn't want to use two. Here's what James Comey said yesterday.
Secretary Clinton used several different servers and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain.
Numerous mobile devices to work with these four servers, four private servers, and then numerous mobile devices. Now you add to that, and again, Mr. Comey got into this yesterday, you add to that, besides the fact that it was illegal, that it violated this statute, that it was gross negligence, for sure. You look at the security threat that this surely posed. I mean, we've talked on this program over the last year about just how cybersecurity, I mean, that's a huge story. And you have all these headlines over the past year, year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, where tens of millions of Americans and tens of thousands of government employees have had confidential information stolen. We know that this is leading to a catastrophic cyber attack. Even the Bible gives us some insight into that with respect to when the trumpet sounds and no one goes off to battle. But you think about some of the headlines from the last couple of years about, with respect to government employees, the IRS having its information exposed or stolen, the Office of Personnel Management. Here's what James Comey had to say yesterday regarding, again, this, well, just how the information that she was working with on these servers, just how wide open it was, This is clip 9.
None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system, but their presence is especially concerning because all of these emails were housed on unclassified personal servers, not even supported by full-time security staff, like those found at agencies and departments of the United States government, or even with a commercial email service like Gmail.
No full-time security staff, like there would have been with the government. And even with that in the government, it hasn't stopped the many cyber attacks. They've still gotten through. Mrs. Clinton had no full-time security staff. He's basically saying you have more security with Gmail than you had with these four servers on her private property. Now, last year, Mrs. Clinton assured us that everything was very secure, which you would expect for her to say. This is clip 10.
It had numerous safeguards. It was on property guarded by the Secret Service, and there were no security breaches.
But given all the other lies that have now been exposed, well, even on that one, there were no security breaches. We had numerous safeguards. Everything was airtight. Here's what James Comey said yesterday, clip 11.
We do assess that hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account. We also assess that Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email domain was both known by a large number of people and readily apparent. She also used her personal email extensively while outside the United States, including sending and receiving work-related emails in the territory of sophisticated adversaries. Given that combination of factors, we assess it is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account.
That's his assessment after this 16-month investigation. So many people knew about it. She used her personal email extensively while traveling outside of the United States. And so he lays it all out there, all the evidence. He exposes quite a number of lies. He basically offers the proof needed to suggest or to recommend that there be criminal charges here, that the Justice Department pursue this. He went further here in this next statement to talk about just how extreme this carelessness was. This is clip number 12.
Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information.
And again, if you go back to the way that the statute is specifically worded, it doesn't even really address whether there's an intent to be deceitful or to undermine the position of the United States. It just says all you have to do is to be grossly negligent, and it can result in up to 10 years in prison. 10 years in prison. And so here is Mr. Comey yesterday talking about how extremely careless she was in handling highly classified information. She was the Secretary of State, traveling the world, visiting nations, and using her personal email service extensively. Notice what Mr. Comey had to say regarding how reasonable this kind of behavior was. Clip 13.
There is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position or in the position of those with whom she was corresponding about those matters should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
Any reasonable person in her position should have known better. Should have known that an unclassified system was no place for these kinds of communications, for this kind of conversation to go on. Classified information. There's evidence to support that conclusion. Any reasonable person. Now, I thought it was interesting just when comparing that statement from Mr. Comey's statement yesterday. Any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position, and then notice what he says here next when he's basically offering his recommendation to the Justice Department. Clip 14.
Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
Now, that's astounding to me. He says there's evidence. there's evidence of potential violations regarding the handling of classified information. But his judgment, and again, the FBI's job is to collect the evidence and then give a recommendation to the Justice Department. But in that statement, he goes further than just giving a recommendation. He says, look, no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case against Mrs. Clinton. No reasonable prosecutor would bring criminal charges against Mrs. Clinton. And this after he says any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position should have known better. It was spelled out to her before coming into that office. She was dealing with highly classified material, highly classified information. And then here's the director of the FBI at the end of his statement, after essentially laying out the case that she should be prosecuted. And he says there at the end, no reasonable prosecutor would pursue a case like this. And so this effectively brings us to the end of the email scandal. And her political opponents will kick and scream for a little bit. But that's over. It's pretty much over. The Attorney General last week, Loretta Lynch, she said that she'd accept the recommendation coming from the FBI. And yesterday, the FBI gave its recommendation. And as it happens, it gave the recommendation just 2 hours before Mrs. Clinton took off on Air Force One with President Obama, their first joint campaign appearance. And so they're off and running. She is, together with President Obama's support. I want to play just one last statement from James Comey's statement yesterday, which I thought this was, again, right near the end of his comments. And I thought this was especially revealing as well. Clip 15.
To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences. To the contrary, those individuals are often subject to security or administrative sanctions, but that's not what we're deciding now.
So that's the FBI director essentially acknowledging that had this been anyone else, there would have been consequences. To be clear, I mean, if someone else comes along and does this same thing or engages in this kind of activity, there will be consequences. But in the case of Hillary Clinton, there are no consequences at all. No, in fact, as I said a moment ago, I mean, 4 months from now, she could be elected the next president of the United States. This is one of the two candidates that Americans will be voting for the first week in November. And what does it say here about this candidate who, even in the midst of campaigning, has had one lie after another lie after another lie fully exposed by this FBI investigation, and yet we get to the end of the investigation and nothing happens? There's no consequences. And so the lies just continue. And of course, the media there, the major media is there to helpfully cover everything up or to target the ones who are trying to get to the facts. This Benghazi report that came out last week, it came out right about the time I took off or left for Florida en route to the UK, So I didn't have that much time to really comment on it from last week. But the New York Times says that this report, you probably saw some bit of it in the news, an 800-page report. The New York Times said last week it ends one of the longest, costliest, and most bitterly partisan congressional investigations in history. See, it's just all a partisan effort. Of course, the Democrats, they're never going to come forward with an in-depth investigation because they want to sweep it under the rug. And then when the Republicans or the conservatives come forward with a full-scale investigation, well, of course, they're motivated by politics. And so we can't really know the truth. One of the costliest, most bitterly partisan congressional investigations in history. It says the House Select Committee on Benghazi issued its final report on Tuesday, finding, this is according to the New York Times, finding no new evidence of culpability or wrongdoing by Hillary Clinton in the 2012 attacks in Libya that left four Americans dead. 800 pages. 800 pages. And, well, the New York Times says there's no new evidence. And, I mean, even the authors of this report, they didn't really come out and do it justice with their statements. They just said, well, are you saying Mrs. Clinton is lying about this or that? Well, you have to read the report. And, of course, no one really does that. Who at the New York Times is going to read through 800 pages or other media outlets for that matter? I mean, here's this report that confirms the fact that the administration, the State Department, they had repeatedly turned down requests for additional security at the consulate. One request after another request after another request. And those were turned down because, well, hey, we had toppled Gaddafi. Libya was, I mean, the rebels were our allies now. And we could travel anywhere in Libya and be safe because we got rid of the problem. The truth is, and this 800-page report brings it out, the Clinton State Department knew full well that there was not enough security detail at that Benghazi compound. These are the facts. One request after another request after another request. We need more security. Well, you know all about some of the other lies associated with Benghazi. And this report brings out that while the attack was going on, while it was happening, administration officials were meeting to decide on the narrative, to decide that they could blame it on a protest. They were meeting as the attack was going on. They were meeting to write up fiction, to blame it on the video, to blame it on the protest. You know, something else that's new in this report. There were Marines ready in Spain at a U.S. base. They were ready to fly to Libya while the attack was going on. That attack went for 13 hours. And Marines could have easily been flown in there in a couple hours' time. But while it was going on, did you know that the Marines were made to change in and out of their uniforms four times as the U.S. government was trying to decide whether or not they should wear military attire or civilian clothes? Well, we don't want to make it look like we're invading Libya. And, well, there were some Libyan officials that were uncomfortable with the U.S. military coming in military gear. And so should they wear military attire? Should they wear civilian clothes? And they got in and out of their uniforms four times while Washington dithered. This is from the report. The State Department, it used up all kinds of valuable time by, quote, insisting that certain elements of the U.S. military respond to Libya in civilian clothes and that it not use vehicles with U.S. markings. It says both restrictions appear to have been concessions to the Libyan government that did not want an identifiable U.S. military presence on the streets of Libya. Well, as it turns out, those troops, those Marines, were never deployed. And the attack went on for 13 hours. And four Americans, including an ambassador, were murdered. Did you know that the Libyans who evacuated the Americans from the CIA annex, I think it was something like 30 Americans that were holed up in there, hoping to survive that dreadful night. Those Americans were evacuated by allies of the old regime under Muammar Gaddafi. Not by rebel forces. Not by the rebels that were supposedly America's new friends. But it was members of the old guard. It was members of Gaddafi's group. They're the ones that came to the defense of the Americans who were still there, left as sitting ducks by their government. This 800-page report, it exposes the lie behind that YouTube video and how that was an idea that came from the White House. It came from the White House. We talked earlier this year about Ben Rhodes. I forget the name of the individual mentioned in the report who came up with the idea. Ben Rhodes, of course, came up with lots of ideas. Fiction, but ideas that, well, this is how we can tell the story about the Iran nuke deal. And it was a similar scenario with respect to the YouTube video. Now, Secretary Clinton, this 800-page report shows that in some of her email correspondence, she knew right away that the attack was by a terrorist group. She knew that they were terrorists. She knew that it was coordinated. And then who was it that was out there in those first few days blaming the attack on a protest that went wrong because of a video that offended Muslims? Well, that would be Secretary Clinton. She was out there blaming it early on. Publicly, she was blaming it on the video. Privately, she acknowledged it was a terrorist attack, of course. But there's, now this is an 800-page report, and there's nothing new in it, the New York Times says. There's no new evidence, so just don't bother with it and move on. That's old news. It's a partisan attack. It's a partisan hit job. Did you know that the administration, the Obama and the Clinton administration, the White House and the State Department, this is brought out in the report, that one reason they didn't send a rescue team even, one reason they did not send a rescue team to Benghazi was because they were under the impression that the attack was over after just a few hours. In fact, it was coming in waves and it went on for 13 hours. What more could go wrong for the Obama administration or for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Clinton's State Department? They thought the attack had ended, and well, we don't need to send in any rescue effort. And as it was, it continued on for several more hours. 13 hours. You know about the president being whisked away the next morning to a campaign event in, I think, Las Vegas. And this report brings out that he didn't go to his security briefing the next morning. Now, there's been other sources over the years that have reported just how infrequent his attendance is at these meetings. something like 50% or less. But even on the morning after an attack in Benghazi, the president of the United States missed his security briefing. And then you get into all the details in this 800-page report about how President Obama and House Secretary Clinton stonewalled the investigation. They stonewalled the investigation. They covered things up. They covered up the fact, for example, that the United States was there transferring weapons to rebel groups in Libya and also in Syria. Weapons that landed in the laps of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But there's no new details brought out in this report, the New York Times says, and so don't worry about it. It's the same old, same old. Hosea 4 and verse 1, it talks about God having a controversy with the inhabitants of our land because there's no truth. There's no truth. There's no knowledge of God in the land. And so we go through these games with all of these scandals. Go back and review some of the coverage. And again, the major media shares in a lot of the blame here. You go back and look at their coverage from September of 2012. Of course, as you know, that was a critical year with respect to politics. President Obama was coming up for re-election. And so you can see why they were so concerned about the narrative. This cannot make us look bad. We can't be made to look like failures with respect to the Libya operation. It has to be seen as a tremendous victory, bringing down Gaddafi. We've got to blame it on the protest. We've got to blame it on the video. And we've got to get out there and apologize to the world of Islam, to apologize for that video. You might recall how Mitt Romney, again, he was the Republican nominee, but he offered some sharp criticism to the Obama administration, saying, look, why is our immediate response to apologize? We've been attacked. We've been attacked. Well, it was Mr. Romney who ended up being attacked by the media because he was making it political. He was making it political by criticizing President Obama. And so he backed off, and then Hillary Clinton and Jay Carney and Susan Rice, they all came forward with one apology after another, apologizing for a guy who made a video blaming the attacks. They happened in Cairo as well. Cairo and Benghazi, blaming them on the video. Apologizing to family members of our victims in Benghazi. Apologizing to them for the video. Well, in the months that followed after Benghazi, the facts did start to receive some exposure as State Department officials started coming forward, even risking their livelihood, their careers. Some did come forward and started to blow the lid off of what really happened. Whistleblowers, even some in the major media, were beginning to expose the lies in the Benghazi talking points. Now, if you go back, we wrote about this in The Trumpet, but if you go back and look at when this really did start to see the light of day, some of the facts that are now confirmed in this 800-page report, you go back to May of 2013, this would have been, seven, eight months after the attack in Benghazi. And right at the time when the White House press secretary was about to be grilled on the Benghazi scandal, many were seeing it now as a scandal, Lois Lerner had a question planted in one of her press conferences on the same day about IRS abuses. And so she was there to receive that question, a plant. And then that became the big story. That was on a Friday back in May. And over the weekend, of course, it got all the coverage. And then by the time the president himself came forward to respond to all of this, of course, the questions at the time, this was Monday, May 13th. All the questions that the president fielded revolved around the IRS scandal. And boy, he was going to get into this. He was going to look into it. He didn't know about this abuse of power. And so he was going to solve this problem. There were a couple of questions in that same conference about the facts regarding Benghazi and the talking points and how the administration lied. And then the president was there to say, look, there's nothing new to report here. Or to use his words, he says, there's no there there. I mean, come on. This is an old story. And as one columnist wrote at the Washington Times at the time, he said, meanwhile, no one even knows where the president was the night the U.S. ambassador was murdered or why the U.S. military sent no help. No one knows who inserted into official talking points a false story that an anti-Islam video led the massacre or led to the massacre. And no one seems to care. I mean, no one knows all of these questions. Well, because of this 800-page report, we now know. We know the name of the individual that planted the false story. We know why the U.S. military wasn't sent in to help. We now know what Secretary Clinton's initial thoughts were regarding the attack. We may not still know all of the movements of the president that night and the morning after, but certainly more of those details have now been brought out. But there's nothing new in the way of evidence in this 800-page report. All the facts, some 4 years on, all the facts are finally gathered. And the media, the major media, collectively yawns. Well, this is the same old partisan attack. Mrs. Clinton herself, last week after this report, finally came forward, finally came out. She said, and with the support of the New York Times, obviously, no new evidence of wrongdoing. That was the headline. And then Mrs. Clinton, the same day or the day after, well, she said something to the effect, well, I'm glad it's over. We can finally move on. We can finally get past this. And now she's undoubtedly saying the same thing with respect to the FBI investigation. An investigation that culminated in just a three-hour interview with Mrs. Clinton last Saturday. And then finally, the director comes forward a couple days later. There's no special prosecutor. There's no grand jury. None of that. All this evidence collected. Evidence that shows there was wrongdoing. Evidence that shows any reasonable person would have known. But look, it's not reasonable for the Justice Department to actually pursue this. Just let it go and move on. Here again, when you look at what the Bible says about the rule of law, we've said so much about it. We've wrote about it. We've written about it in the America Under Attack book, a booklet that just keeps getting bigger with each new revision. There's no truth in the land. Isaiah, the prophet, he said in chapter 59, for your hands are defiled with blood and your fingers with iniquity. Your lips have spoken lies. Your tongue has muttered perverseness. None calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. Nobody pleads for truth, you see. And those that do, oh, well, they're just partisan hacks. Never mind all of the testimony. Never mind the 800 pages. Never mind the facts as they're assembled. If they're assembled by someone that you disagree with politically, it's surely not true. It's surely not true. I mean, we've come to the point now where government officials are out there bragging about the fiction. Bragging about it. That's what Ben Rhodes was doing with the New York Times. And did you know, you may have seen this story from a few weeks ago. He basically admitted to the New York Times, well, yeah, we just made that up. And did you know that something that they made up, that he admitted to making up, was then again reported in the New York Times as fact? Even after the confession. We continue on with the lies and the vanity, the mischief, the iniquity. None pleads for truth. The truth doesn't matter. My father wrote on the subject of the rule of law. He said back in the year 2000, we have a crisis. This was after the presidential crisis of that year. We have a crisis because some leaders do not love the Constitution more than themselves. Does anybody really believe these men love the Constitution of this great land more than their man becoming president? That's the most important thing. Look, this is a woman that half the people in the United States of America desperately want to become president. And so they're rejoicing that no one pays any attention to the 800-page report. They're rejoicing that James Comey would finally come forward and say, look, no reasonable prosecutor is going to go with this. That's our recommendation. God says that we're so steeped in sin and lawlessness that there's no truth. Verse 7 says, their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. The way of peace they know not. And there's no judgment in their goings. They've made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace. We don't know the way to peace. There's no judgment. We make haste to shed innocent blood. Wasting and destruction are in our paths. Verse 9 says, therefore is judgment far from us, neither does justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity, for brightness, but we walk in darkness. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We're in desolate places as dead men. We roar all like bears and mourn sore like doves. We look for judgment, but there is none. For salvation, but it's far from us. Isaiah goes on to talk about our iniquities, our transgressions, multiplying. Our sins, you see. Our sins testify against us. Notice these two verses 13 and 14. In transgressing and lying against the eternal and departing away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood, it says. Conceiving of falsehood, thinking of fiction, thinking of a narrative. We've got to have a narrative. We've got to create a story that makes us look good. We've got to come up with something believable. We've got to really sell it. Well, in verse 15, it says, yes, truth fails, and he that departs from evil makes himself a prey. You see, if there's a few that are there trying to dig up the facts, well, they're going to make themselves a prey. They're going to look like the crazy one. They're going to look like the partisan hack. They're going to look like they have it in for someone because of, well, it's politics. And meanwhile, the rule of law just breaks down. and the nations fall apart. Paul Johnson, we've quoted this often, he wrote back in 1999 about the rule of law, saying the rule of law is distinct from the rule of a person or class or people, and as opposed to the rule of force, is an abstract, sophisticated concept. It's mighty difficult to achieve, he said. It's mighty difficult to achieve the rule of law. But until it's achieved and established in the public mind with such vehemence that masses of individuals are prepared to die to uphold it, no other form of progress can be regarded as secure. He said the Greeks had tried to establish the rule of law but failed. The Romans had succeeded under the Republic, but Caesar and his successors had destroyed it. The essence of the rule of law, listen to this, the essence of the rule of law is its impersonality, omnipotence, and ubiquity. It's the same law for everyone, everywhere. Kings, emperors, high priests, and the state itself are subject to it. If exceptions are made, the rule of law begins to collapse. That was the grand lesson of antiquity. That's the grand lesson of history that we haven't learned. Exceptions are being made everywhere now, right and left. And Mr. Comey in his concluding statements even indicated that it would be different if it was a different person working for the government. There would be consequences. But with respect to the presumptive Democrat nominee for president of the United States of America, there are no consequences. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll conclude the program with a few updates and statistics. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
Just a few updates here before we conclude. This past weekend, our TV program that played here in the UK, Is There Life After Death? That's a program in which we offered the incredible human potential. That brought in 151 requests for the book, 151 for Mr. Armstrong's classic work, The Incredible Human Potential. That follows a really successful weekend the week before. Where are we in Bible prophecy? 229 requests, counting all the residual requests that came in the week that followed, 229 requests for Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and for the King of the South booklet. And so it's great to get some of those prophetic works out there, along with the incredible human potential. Lots of literature going out over these past couple of weeks. And speaking of literature distribution, we're now into the month of July, which means that half of this calendar year is now behind us. And the stats coming in over the first half of 2016 are very encouraging. The most requested piece of literature thus far has been the United States and Britain in Prophecy. We've distributed 882 of those books over the first 6 months of 2016. And following behind the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy is Mystery of the Ages. That's been distributed to 547 people here in the U.K. region. And that's followed by the Ten Commandments booklet, 413. How to Be an Overcomer, 366. And He Was Right, the booklet on the many prophecies proclaimed by Herbert Armstrong over the course of his ministry. 357 of those booklets have been distributed. Now also, as far as correspondence course students are concerned, we've added 450 this year alone, just in the first 6 months of the year. And last year, it was about a third of that. So some really strong numbers with respect to the correspondence course. Lastly here, the SoundCloud plays. We talked about how June was a record month for us. We finished the month with 31,500 plays on SoundCloud. The most listened to was Take Yourself to the Challenge. That's a program actually that was played originally back in February. But following behind that, 3,144 plays, you had the one about Brexit, Britain on the way out. Who could have possibly predicted this 60 years ago? That's one that got 2,573 plays. So we'll keep you updated on July, which is off to a little bit of a slow start because of the holiday, and I've been away for a few days. But hopefully we can really finish strong with these last 3 weeks plus in July. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this, again, is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.